The Oval Office, a symbol of immense power, rarely feels as serene as its polished mahogany desk and plush carpets suggest. Behind its doors, the President of the United States grapples daily with a multitude of challenges, from domestic crises to international diplomacy, each demanding a nuanced application of authority. The executive branch, far from being a monolithic entity, is a sprawling ecosystem of power, process, and people fundamentally responsible for translating the aspirations of law into the tangible realities of governments. It is a world where constitutional text meets the messy, intricate dance of real-world implementation, and where the decisions of one individual ripple through the lives of millions. At the apex of this colossal structure sits the president, an office imbued with a unique blend of formal, explicitly defined powers and informal, historically accrued influences. Article Roman II of the U.S. Constitution, in crisp, economical language, lays the foundation for presidential authority. It designates the president as the commander-in-chief of the armed forces, a power that places the entirety of the nation's military might under civilian control. This is not a theoretical power. Its weight is felt acutely in moments of national crisis. Consider September 11, 2001, when the nation reeled from an unprecedented attack. President George W. Bush, exercising his authority as commander-in-chief, swiftly ordered the deployment of troops to Afghanistan, initiating a global war on terror that reshaped international relations for decades. The decision was his to make, predicated on his constitutional role, though Congress retained and still retains the sole authority to declare war. This distinction between commanding troops and formally declaring conflict has been a source of recurring tension throughout American history, underscoring the dynamic interplay between presidential action and congressional prerogative. Beyond the battlefield, the president acts as the nation's chief diplomat, a role that casts them as the principal architect of American foreign policy. The Constitution grants the president the power to make treaties, albeit with the advice and consent of the Senate, and to receive ambassadors, thereby recognizing foreign governments. This dual capacity allows the president to navigate the treacherous waters of international relations, negotiating pacts and forging alliances. A poignant illustration of this diplomatic prowess can be found in the Camp David Accords of 1978. President Jimmy Carter, leveraging his personal dedication and diplomatic skills, brought together Israeli Prime Minister Menachem Begin and Egyptian President Anwar Sadat for 13 days of intense negotiations. The resulting peace treaty, a landmark achievement in Middle Eastern diplomacy, demonstrated the profound impact a president can have on global affairs when acting as the nation's chief negotiator. It was a testament to the fact that while treaties require Senate ratification, the president's personal engagement and vision can lay the groundwork for transformative agreements. The president is also the chief executive or administrator, charged with a weighty responsibility to take care that the laws be faithfully executed. This broad directive is the wellspring from which much of the executive branch's administrative power flows. It entails overseeing a vast network of departments, agencies, and offices, each tasked with specific governmental functions. Appointments, too, fall under this umbrella. The president nominates, with Senate confirmation, thousands of officials, from cabinet secretaries to Supreme Court justices, shaping the very composition and direction of the federal government. Reflecting on the tumultuous period of the Great Depression, President Franklin D. Roosevelt dramatically expanded the scope of the federal government. Under his leadership, numerous new agencies were established as part of the New Deal, designed to tackle economic hardship and societal problems. These agencies, like the Civilian Conservation Corps or the Public Works Administration, were direct manifestations of the president's executive authority to implement laws and address national crises, demonstrating how a president can reshape the administrative landscape to meet pressing needs. Though not a member of Congress, the president undeniably functions as a chief legislator. The Constitution empowers the president to recommend to Congress such measures as he shall judge necessary and expedient. This is more than a mere suggestion. It is an active role in shaping the legislative agenda. The power to veto legislation passed by Congress provides a formidable check on the legislative branch, forcing Congress to consider presidential preferences. While a two-thirds vote in both chambers can override a veto, this threshold is rarely met, making the veto a powerful tool. President Barack Obama's persistent advocacy for, and eventual signing of, the Affordable Care Act in 2010 exemplifies this legislative leadership. He utilized the full weight of his office, engaging in public appeals, negotiating with members of Congress, and ultimately signing into law one of the most significant pieces of social legislation in decades, despite fierce political opposition. Finally, the president serves as the chief of state, a largely ceremonial role that symbolizes national unity and represents the United States on the world stage. From hosting foreign dignitaries at elaborate White House dinners to delivering the annual State of the Union address, these actions foster a sense of national identity and project an image of American leadership globally. The judicial powers of the president, though less frequently exercised, are nonetheless significant. The president can grant reprieves and pardons for federal offenses, an act of mercy that can reshape individual fates. Perhaps the most famous and controversial instance of this power was President Gerald Ford's pardon of former President Richard Nixon in 1974, seeking to heal a nation deeply fractured by the Watergate scandal. These formal powers, explicitly enumerated in the Constitution, are the bedrock of presidential authority. However, the modern presidency is also heavily influenced by a suite of informal powers, abilities that have evolved through practice, precedent, and the dynamic interpretation of constitutional clauses. These are not found in the explicit text but have become integral to the exercise of presidential leadership. One of the most potent informal tools is the executive order. These are directives issued by the president to federal agencies that carry the force of law, yet they bypass the need for congressional approval. They are typically grounded in existing statutory authority or the president's constitutional powers, often used to clarify or implement existing laws or to manage the executive branch. The desegregation of the armed forces by President Harry S. Truman through Executive Order 9981 in 1948 is a powerful historical example. Facing entrenched racial discrimination, Truman used his executive authority to mandate equality within the military, a decision that had profound social and political ramifications. The benefits of executive orders are clear. They allow a president to act decisively, especially when facing legislative gridlock or urgent national needs. They can catalyze immediate change. However, their drawbacks are equally apparent. They can be seen as an end run around the legislative process, potentially leading to an imperial presidency where the president dictates policy without the consent of the elected representatives of the people. They also lack permanence. A subsequent president can easily overturn an executive order, leading to policy instability and partisan whiplash. This tension between efficiency and democratic accountability lies at the heart of the debate surrounding executive orders. Similar to executive orders in their bypassing of legislative ratification are executive agreements. These are international accords entered into by the president with foreign heads of state, without requiring the advice and consent of the Senate. They are frequently used for routine administrative matters or when speed and secrecy are paramount in foreign policy. The Iran nuclear deal, formerly known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, initially implemented through an executive agreement, exemplifies this. While it represented a significant international understanding, its status as an executive agreement meant it did not carry the same legal weight as a treaty under U.S. law, making it more susceptible to alteration or withdrawal by a subsequent administration. Executive privilege is another significant, though frequently contested, informal power. It is the asserted right of the president and other executive branch officials to withhold information from Congress or the courts, often justified by the need for candid advice to the president or for the protection of national security. Its limits were famously tested in United States v. Nixon 1974, where President Richard Nixon attempted to invoke executive privilege to withhold audio tapes related to the Watergate scandal. The Supreme Court, in a landmark decision, affirmed the existence of executive privilege but crucially ruled that it was not absolute, particularly in the face of a criminal investigation. This case underscored the principle that even the president is not above the law. Signing statements are written pronouncements issued by the president when signing a bill into law. These statements can serve various purposes: to offer the president's interpretation of the law, to announce constitutional objections to certain provisions, or to direct how the executive branch should implement the legislation. Critics argue that presidents can use signing statements to effectively cherry-pick which parts of a law they will enforce, thereby altering congressional intent or even exercising a line-item veto by other means. President George W. Bush, for instance, issued numerous signing statements, sometimes indicating that he would treat specific legislative provisions as non-binding if he believed they encroached upon his constitutional powers. This practice sparked considerable debate over the separation of powers and the president's role in interpreting law. Finally, the president possesses immense power through agenda setting and persuasion, often referred to as the bully pulpit. The president's prominent position inherently commands public attention, allowing them to shape the national discourse, influence public opinion, and exert significant persuasive pressure on Congress and the populace. A president can use a televised address to rally public support for a particular legislative initiative, effectively pressuring lawmakers to align with the executive's agenda. This informal power, though intangible, is often as critical as any formal authority in achieving policy goals. Yet, even with this formidable array of powers, a president cannot govern alone. The vast machinery that executes presidential directives and implements laws is the federal bureaucracy. This is a sprawling, hierarchical organization of agencies and departments, the operational heart of the executive branch, translating abstract policy goals into concrete actions. The federal bureaucracy is comprised of several key components. The most visible are the cabinet departments, 15 major administrative units like the Department of State, Department of Defense, or Department of the Treasury. Each is headed by a secretary except the Department of Justice, led by the Attorney General, appointed by the President and confirmed by the Senate. These secretaries serve as the President's closest advisors and are responsible for implementing policy in broad, critical areas of governments. Then there are independent executive agencies, which, while similar to cabinet departments, usually have a more focused area of responsibility and operate outside the departmental structure. NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, responsible for space exploration, and the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency tasked with environmental protection, are prime examples. Their heads are also presidential appointees confirmed by the Senate. More distinct are the Independent Regulatory Commission's IRCs. These agencies, like the Federal Communications Commission FCC, the Securities and Exchange Commission SEC, or the Federal Reserve System, are designed to regulate specific aspects of the economy or public interest. What sets them apart is their relative independence from direct presidential and congressional control. Their commissioners typically serve fixed, staggered terms that often extend beyond a single presidential administration, insulating them somewhat from political pressures. This structure is intended to ensure that complex economic and technical regulations are made on the basis of expertise and stability, rather than short-term political considerations. Lastly, government corporations are businesses established by Congress to provide services that could be provided by private companies but are often deemed necessary for public welfare or are simply unprofitable for the private sector. The U.S. Postal Service, Amtrak, and the Tennessee Valley Authority TVA are classic examples, typically charging for their services but operating under federal oversight. The functions of this vast bureaucracy are manifold. Primarily, it engages in implementation, carrying out the laws passed by Congress and executive orders issued by the president. This involves developing specific rules, procedures, and programs to achieve policy goals. For instance, when Congress passes a new education law, it is the Department of Education that develops the detailed regulations on how schools must comply, from student-teacher ratios to curriculum standards. Beyond implementation, the bureaucracy is responsible for day-to-day administration, managing government operations, collecting taxes, delivering social security benefits, and maintaining national infrastructure. It also performs crucial regulation, developing and enforcing rules to protect public health, safety, and economic stability. The Food and Drug Administration (FDA) establishing safety standards for medications and food products is a quintessential regulatory function. Some agencies also exercise adjudication, acting as quasi-judicial bodies to hear and resolve disputes related to their regulations, much like the National Labor Relations Board (NLRB) arbitrating labor disputes. Crucially, bureaucrats provide essential expertise, possessing specialized knowledge that informs policymaking, conducting research, and gathering data. However, the bureaucracy is not without its critics and challenges. The sheer size and complexity often lead to accusations of red tape, excessive adherence to rules and formalities, resulting in inefficiency and frustration. The difficulty in holding individual bureaucrats accountable for decisions within such a vast, intricate system gives rise to concerns about a lack of accountability. Bureaucratic drift occurs when agencies interpret laws in ways that diverge from congressional intent, pursuing their own goals or interpretations. Moreover, the close relationships that can form between bureaucratic agencies, congressional committees, and interest groups, often dubbed iron triangles or issue networks, can lead to policies that serve narrow interests rather than the broader public good. Historically, government appointments were often based on political loyalty, a spoils system that led to inefficiency and corruption. The Pendleton Civil Service Reform Act of 1883 largely replaced this with a merit system, requiring government jobs to be awarded based on qualifications, aiming to professionalize the public service. This brings us to policy implementation, the critical stage where broad legislative mandates transform into tangible results. It is the process by which policies enacted by Congress and signed into law by the President are actually carried out by the executive branch. The devil, as the saying goes, is often in the details, and the manner of implementation can profoundly alter a policy's effectiveness. A core aspect of implementation is rulemaking, often referred to as regulation. Laws passed by Congress are often general, outlining broad goals. It is up to agencies to create detailed rules and regulations through processes involving public notice, comment periods, and publication in the Federal Register to specify exactly how the law will be applied. These rules, once finalized, carry the full force of law. For instance, an Environmental Protection Act might broadly mandate cleaner air. The EPA then steps in to develop specific, measurable regulations on permissible emission levels for various industries. Bureaucratic discretion is another crucial element. Laws cannot foresee every specific situation, so bureaucrats often possess a degree of flexibility and judgment in interpreting and applying laws and regulations. This discretion, while necessary for adaptability, can also lead to inconsistencies or criticisms that unelected officials are making policy decisions. A social worker, for example, might have discretion in determining eligibility for a welfare program based on guidelines that allow for some interpretation of an applicant's unique circumstances. Effective implementation also hinges on resource allocation. Agencies must decide how to distribute their budget, personnel, and other resources strategically to achieve policy goals, often requiring difficult trade-offs and prioritization. Furthermore, successful implementation frequently demands extensive coordination and communication across different agencies, various levels of government, federal, state, local, and even private organizations. A clear, shared understanding of objectives is paramount. Finally, agencies are responsible for monitoring and evaluation, constantly assessing the implementation process and the policy's effectiveness. This feedback loop can lead to necessary adjustments in implementation strategies or even prompt calls for legislative changes if the policy proves ineffective. Yet, policy implementation is fraught with challenges. Vague or ambiguous legislation can lead to a lack of clarity, making it difficult for agencies to discern congressional intent and leading to varying interpretations. Insufficient resources, whether funding, staff, or technological capabilities, can severely hamper an agency's agency's ability to effectively carry out a policy, opposition from stakeholders, interest groups, affected industries, or even other government entities can resist implementation, causing delays or modifications. Interagency conflict can arise when different agencies have conflicting mandates or priorities, making coordinated implementation a logistical nightmare. And, of course, political interference from the President, Congress, or public opinion can influence how policies are implemented, sometimes diverting from their original intent. These inherent complexities give rise to enduring debates about the executive branch's role and power. The concept of an imperial presidency often resurfaces, particularly in discussions about presidents exercising expanded power in areas like undeclared wars or the extensive use of executive orders, raising questions about whether presidential authority has expanded beyond its constitutional limits. There is also ongoing debate about bureaucratic power and accountability. How much discretion should unelected bureaucrats wield? And how can they be held democratically accountable when they shape significant policy details? The constant tension between a president's desire to assert control over the bureaucracy to implement their agenda and the bureaucracy's inherent expertise, established procedures, and potential for independence is a perennial source of conflict. Ultimately, the balance of power between the executive and legislative branches, particularly concerning policymaking and implementation, remains a perpetual area of contestation, with ongoing questions about congressional oversight of bureaucratic rulemaking and the limits of presidential action. Consider a recent major policy, such as the ambitious infrastructure projects outlined in the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act of 2021. This sweeping legislation aimed to modernize American roads, bridges, public transit, broadband internet, and water infrastructure. Its success or failure hinges on the intricate interplay of presidential powers, the structure of the bureaucracy, and the challenges of policy implementation. From the presidential perspective, the president utilized their agenda-setting power to elevate infrastructure as a national priority, deploying the bully pulpit to garner public and congressional support. Once passed, the president, as chief executive, became responsible for orchestrating its implementation, appointing key individuals to lead relevant agencies and issuing executive orders to streamline processes or establish interagency task forces. The president's persuasive power was crucial in rallying governors and local leaders, whose cooperation is essential given the federal-state nature of many infrastructure projects. The bureaucracy, however, bears the immense weight of actual implementation. Agencies like the Department of Transportation, the Environmental Protection Agency, and the Department of Energy are directly involved. These cabinet departments must interpret the broad language of the Act, engaging in extensive rulemaking to define specific project eligibility criteria, environmental review processes, and allocation formulas for billions of dollars. Independent agencies like the Army Corps of Engineers play a crucial role in permitting and project oversight. Government corporations, such as Amtrak, receive direct funding for upgrades. The success of this policy relies on these agencies' expertise in civil engineering, environmental science, and financial management. Yet, they face significant challenges, the sheer lack of clarity in some legislative mandates, forcing them to make complex interpretations, the need for massive resource allocation in terms of staffing and oversight, and the critical necessity of coordination and communication among dozens of federal, state, and local entities, not to mention private contractors. Bureaucratic discretion comes into play as project managers make site-specific decisions, weighing environmental concerns against construction timelines, a process ripe for both necessary flexibility and potential criticism. Opposition from environmental groups, local communities, or even certain industries can create stakeholder resistance, leading to delays. Ultimately, the success of the Infrastructure Act is not just about the president's vision or Congress's legislation, but about the mundane, painstaking, often frustrating work of thousands of unelected bureaucrats navigating a labyrinth of regulations, conflicting priorities, and political pressures to turn concrete and steel into functional infrastructure. The ability of the executive branch to effectively implement such a massive undertaking will serve as a definitive test of how these complex forces interact, determining whether the policy remains an ambitious blueprint or transforms into a tangible national asset.